Hey Megan, what's up?
Hello. Hi Kauai. Welcome to the Malama Kauai Show. It's our last show of the year. Yay. Holiday time coming up. So today we're actually going to talk to Hoya Appleseed. Genevieve Mama is calling in. And we're going to talk about some hunger legislation and policy things that are going on statewide and in the world. And then after that, we're going to start talking about holidays and get into the positive side of the end of the year with some local Kauai holiday events and some fun, exciting things happening in the community. So you can feel free to call in too if you have a nice holiday event going on. You want to share what your local Kauai holiday tradition is. We're here to talk story today. So,
and that number is 808-826-7771 if you want to call into the show today. And we've got Genevieve on the line right now.
Genevieve, hello. Thank you for joining us.
Yes. Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so honored to be here on the last show of the year, too. I didn't realize.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think after last month was quite the shakeup with the snap pause and, you know, government shutdown. There's a lot going on and a lot of questions, right? And it was very kind of felt urgent and critical and, you know, just very tense. Now that things have kind of opened up a little bit, now is more of looking back at the last year and strategy and what's happening and maybe more of a calm viewpoint than before. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for you to share, why did I ask you here? Tell us what Appleseed does. So I'm a big fan, but those listeners out there that might not know what you guys do, maybe you could give us a little primer.
Of course, yeah. So my name is Genevieve Mama. I work at Hawaii Appleseed, and we're a nonprofit organization focused on policy and research. Specifically, our mission is advancing economic justice in Hawaii. And so we really focus on working families in Hawaii and how to, you know, deal with this world we're in, this state of living we're in, where the cost of living crisis is going on, you know, housing is getting more and more expensive. People are leaving Hawaii due to financial obligations. And me specifically, I work on our food equity team, so I'm a policy analyst. And we do a lot of research, policy analysis, and get involved in the Hawaii state legislature. So that's definitely ramping up after the holidays. And we've also tried to do a lot more in community engagement and partnering with different coalitions to really try to engage people to be, you know, involved and able to, you know, break down some of that wonky policy stuff so they can understand how it's really impacting people on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I remember one of the big ones you guys did that I think like everyone heard about was the transient vacation rental report. Mm-hmm. And you're mm-hmm. talking about like how much outside ownership there was in different counties. And I think that one was really shocking for everybody to see the data on paper. I won't hold you to the stats. I don't remember them. And I know you're not the housing person, but for anybody that remembers that report that came out, where Kauai was very, very high in off-island TVR ownership. I know that on Kauai, that one made a really big impact in opening people's eyes. So today we're talking about mm-hmm. hunger, though. Yeah. You know, taking a look back, I guess, are we out of the clear? There's a lot still happening in the SNAP world. What's mm-hmm. on your purview surrounding SNAP, both at like the state level, the federal level? What's the latest?
Yeah, so, I mean, as you know, and I think as a lot of people know, there's a lot that happened in just the past year, but there still is a lot coming down the line. In our purview, I will say there are still a bunch of work requirements for SNAP specifically that are probably going to be impacting people soon. Luckily for Hawaii, we actually aren't subject to the work requirements yet. So this might be national news right now, but Hawaii and Alaska actually had the opportunity to delay the work requirements, which was kind of one of the bigger steps to impact the SNAP program. And just to kind of break it down, work requirements are similar to how Medicaid works, and it would be subject to families and people who are without disabilities, able-bodied. Is usually the term that we see used. ABOD is the abbreviation. But essentially, this group is going to be subject to work requirements, meaning they have to work at least 20 hours a week Otherwise, they will not be able to get SNAP as they did for the first 3 months. So essentially, there's a three-month period where, you know, anyone who applies and is accepted to SNAP, even if they are able-bodied and they're not working, they can get SNAP for 3 months. But after those 3 months, they're going to be subject to work requirements. So essentially, if they're not meeting that 20 hours of work a week, then they're going to be pushed off the program. And so this is something that has always existed, but it used to be for anyone who's able-bodied and without dependents. So essentially, with children, if you have children, then you're not going to be subject to these. And if you're above the age of 65, you wouldn't be subject. And what changed is that now, for the first time ever, families with children will be impacted. And so instead of exempting families, families with children age 14 and up are now going to be subject to those requirements. And similarly, they changed the age group. So instead of 65 and up, it's now going to be 55 and up. So this is kind of like what we've been hearing at the national level right now, because all of the other states, other than Hawaii and Alaska, have had to start kicking people off that fall into those groups and that aren't doing their 20 hours of work a week. But we, luckily, the DHS applied to this waiver so that it's delayed for another year. But that is coming down the line. Something else coming down the line is the state is going to have to begin to pay for SNAP, which has never happened before. And that's super unprecedented. And that's going to start just next year with administrative costs.
And that's interesting. Do you feel like, I know in the past, it seems like the feds define the qualifying level of like gross income a household can have to participate in the program. And then the states, and correct me if I'm wrong, and the state determines mm-hmm. what counts as income. So in the past, they've mm-hmm. been able to determine, you know, if, I don't know, alimony or child support and things like that actually count towards that amount or not. And I'm wondering if what they count towards income is going to change now that they have to actually pay for administering the program as well. Do you think that's going to shift how they manage the program and what they count?
Yeah, so in terms of what was actually in that big budget bill that kind of changed Medicaid and changed SNAP, there's not going to be any, right now, in the law, HR 1, there aren't any changes to that income eligibility, but we are seeing in other states that's getting threatened. So what we know for sure is that there's going to be those work requirements I just talked about, and the state's going to have to pay for admin. State's also going to have to pay even more depending on their error rate. And they also eliminated the SNAP education program, and they also have cut off immigrants or refugees and asylum seekers. That's what we know for sure. In terms of income, that's something that's up in the air, and we don't really know what that's going to look like. It's something that, you know, we have fought for in Hawaii and the state to really make sure that there's not this big cutoff. We've implemented this policy, which is broad-based categorical eligibility, which is another wonky term, but essentially is just a way to ensure that more people can access SNAP. And just with the way the administration has, you know, viewed this program, it's something that we've always relied on. It's always been this social safety net, and there's really no telling down the line how that might change for income, and it doesn't seem like it would be good. So that's why we've been really trying to look at different ways that the state can step up, or the counties can step up, or we can use federal programs outside of SNAP, since we don't know how sure this program is going to be in the future.
Yeah, it was interesting. So one of our positions actually got cut because it was under SNAP funding. So I have experience with some of the cuts for our food mm-hmm. access coordinator for the county plan. And it's been really interesting because I think some of the conversations happening today are that the state did sign on to have some of the individual item eligibility discussions. Mm-hmm. So now soda is not eligible. I know some states have had a very long list. They've had anything with sugar, mm-hmm. Candy, things like that. I haven't really gotten clear on what Hawaii has done, but that will... even though the feds say it's rolling out January 1st, the waivers are, but the actual implementation in Hawaii, it sounds like, isn't going to happen until August. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm curious, have you gotten anything in terms of, is it just soda? Are there other things that Hawaii is going to put in the ineligible category?
Yeah, of course. And glad you talked about the food access coordinator position, too. I mean, that's affecting each of our counties, and it's another way that the state or the county is going to have to step up to, you know, keep those programs going and keep that position going, because the food access coordinator is a great work. But yeah, so SNAP restrictions is something that we just found out about very recently, and it just kind of came out in the news. For Hawaii, it's one of the least restrictive waivers that we're seeing out of all of the states, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be on soft drinks, so that's a carbonated beverage, basically soda, that has more than 10 grams of sugar. And, you know, take with that what you will, it's really going to fall to the grocery stores and our food industry to literally sort through all of that and determine the soft drinks that are 10 grams of sugar or more, and they're going based off of nutrition labels and whatnot. It's a very tedious process.
You're going to see a lot of soda coming out with 9 grams of sugar is probably what you're going to see out of the industry, right?
Oh, of course, yes. It's, you know, this is something that a few states have been working on. I think maybe 26 or something now. I could be wrong. But there were just 6 new states, and Hawaii was one of them. And, I mean, it's really difficult because from a food security perspective, we are always wanting to increase access. And there actually is very little research on this area that shows that these restrictions have any impact on health in terms of actually, you know, making people
make better choices. Yeah.
Right. No.
But, I'm not hating on it in general, though, because, like, diabetes is such a massive issue, and it's proven mm-hmm. that sugar sweetened beverages are a huge component to causing that. And I know, mm-hmm. you know, so while I don't like the government telling us what we can and can't do, you know, and it is public funding, which means it's our funding, all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I think when you are pushing towards health, especially with children, you know, it's not the worst thing they're doing right now. It probably wouldn't be on my top 100 of the worst things they're doing because there's so many horrible things happening. But I'm curious, like, I'm wondering anyway, there's cuts to Medicaid funding that happened in HR1 as well. And mm-hmm. we noticed that there's a tie-in for the feds came out with this rural transformation grant, which is supposed to help supplement some of that Medicaid funding. And they actually get points, the states, mm-hmm. for having state-approved waivers prohibiting the purchase of non-nutritious items in SNAP. So I'm wondering if that was a component of it, like a trade with the feds saying, like, hey, we'll give you some money for Medicaid, but we have to make sure that you're limiting, you know, federal use of dollars against these non-nutritious foods. And maybe that's why a lot of the states are stepping up real quickly, is they really need to combat that loss of Medicaid funding, too.
Yep, you're exactly right. I was actually just working on this literally just before this call because we were about to put something out. So, you know, people can stay tuned as we do that. This was a way for, I think it was a decision that our state made, obviously a difficult decision that had to be made, because it was like, do we want to restrict people's choice on SNAP, or do we want to get more of this pot of funding for rural health transformation funding, which is what that was. And so obviously that's an extremely difficult position for the state to be in, and I think that's kind of what's going on this year that's been different than before, is that the states end up getting put in these uncomfortable positions where they have to make, you know, decisions that are going to cost people. And it's, you know, these things where it's like, okay, do we want to do healthcare or food security? Like, you know, it's a very hard decision to make. And so you're completely right. A lot of the states have been incentivized to put forward a food restrictions waiver. And so that is definitely why Hawaii did that. I doubt that our state would ever pursue this before. And I know that's true because earlier this year, a lot of states were starting to put forward food restrictions waivers, and Hawaii was not in the conversation at all. But of course, there's this $50 billion pot of funding that's going to go to all states. And the amount of money that we get is determined on our application. And they essentially have this incentive where it's like, okay, if you show that you're using the best of your ability to restrict food and SNAP, then you might get more funding or more points on your application. I'm not sure the nitty-gritty details, but there was definitely a hard decision to be made there. And I think, you know, these things are so connected as well. I mean, rural health is a huge thing here in Hawaii. I think that our rural health centers are going to be hit some of the hardest impacts because of the Medicaid cuts. And so it's really essential that we get as much funding as possible. I do agree.
Right. So anyone that's just tuning in, we're listening to KKCR, the Malama Kauai Radio Show, and I'm on with Genevieve Mama from Hawaii Appleseed, and we are discussing SNAP and other hunger policy issues at the state and federal level.
Fun stuff.
Yes. So, you know, all of this, what else is going on in the state? I'm sure there's a lot happening. You guys are prepping for a legislative session. Are there things that went through last session you're excited about, things you want to, didn't make it, that you're going to try and push through this year? What's happening?
Yeah, so like I was saying earlier, you know, all of the federal cuts, you know, they're looking scary. Of course, SNAP, this long-standing program, but we are definitely trying to figure out ways that, you know, Hawaii can stand on its own and get funding for programs that we deem are essential, even if that might not be something that is supported financially by the federal government. And, you know, we really learned that it's not just these HR1 cuts, but even what we saw with the federal shutdown, even what we see when disaster strikes, we need to have these like pillars in our at the state level and even at the county level. So I think legislative session wise, last session I was really excited that we got free school meals in public schools expanded to a larger group of students. So this year, that was elimination of that reduced price category. So now it's just free and paid. And starting next school year, it's going to be the second phase of that law that went into place, which is that now families who fall under the 300% federal poverty level income threshold are going to be able to be eligible for free school meals. So definitely excited about that.
That's exciting. I know that was a huge win people have been working on for years. So,
Yes.
I mean, who can really disagree that our money isn't well spent feeding kids, right? You force them to be in school, feed them.
Exactly. I mean, and it was really amazing. We had so many KKE come to the legislature and tell these, you know, really hard stories. And teachers, counselors coming to us and coming to the legislators being like, this is a real thing that's happening in our community. And, you know, some people made some really convincing arguments. They're like, why do we see the people in our jail system, but we can't feed our kids? Like, what's going on here? So that was huge. And we definitely wanted to be expanded. We want it free for everyone. So hopefully we're going to get there by 2030, maybe is the goal.
That's great. Thanks. I know you guys work really hard on like bringing people together for these two. What are some of your other top ones? You know, actually, I have a more specific question. I see a lot, and this is kind of society in general, we're always responding to things instead of planning ourselves to not be in those positions, right? It's always like, oh no, emergency. You know, stock up the food banks, feed everybody. But what are the things that people are doing out there? Are there any policy or legislation coming up that actually prepare us to be more self-sustaining? Because we do know with all these climate change, policy issues, whatever it might be, we're super vulnerable out here in the middle of the ocean. You know, everyone's really aware of that, but it seems like those investments in like longer term food systems and, you know, lowering prices of commodities for our own food production locally, like, are there anything along that line that's helping to make something that's more cyclical and not just emergency related?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, with the past few emergencies, disaster situations, we've really had a lot of lessons learned as a state and as on each of our islands. Actually, just recently was at the Hawaii Food System Summit, and it was focused on disaster resilience and a huge part of resilience is having the preparation and the planning so that we, during blue skies, actually have systems set up that can help us during those gray skies, but they should already be operating during blue skies. And I think specifically, one of the main priorities for us has been farm to families. And so that's been, you know, allowing the food banks to buy from local farmers and actually connect local produce to people through the food banks. And that's something that they got funding for last year. That was a big legislative priority for our network. And they were able to get $500,000 for the state, which is unfortunately only a drop in the bucket when you think statewide. I mean, if we look at Maui County, they had a similar program, Farm to Families, and they put $1 million in the budget for it. So they're looking to, the food banks and us are looking together to hopefully get more funding for that. Another program that really stands out to me is the Bucks, you know, that offers 50% for people on SNAP to buy local produce. And this is something that's super unique to Hawaii and is uplifting our local agricultural economy. And we're really toying with the idea of how we can expand that idea of incentivizing, you know, buying local produce by making it more affordable to people maybe outside of SNAP. And I think that, you know, it takes a lot of work and a lot of working together. So it's definitely not just us. And we're working with our partners to try to make that more sustainable food system, for sure.
Yeah, no, the Bucks has been fantastic. I know another good one they did just popped in my mind. They established a reoccurring food hub grant program with the Department of Agriculture, which I know has lifted up. You know, we were one of the awardees one year. They're kind of making their way around a bunch of food hubs across the state. And they've been investing in more infrastructure resilience so that, you know, these institutions that are already built on weekly kind of aggregation and distribution are getting more fine-tuned and even more, I guess, responsive when disaster does strike, you know, like having solar systems and, you know, things like that in place so that they can be more resilient when times come up. So that was another really cool one I thought was a little bit more proactive based.
Definitely, definitely. And even just looking at Kauai, I mean, so Appleseed actually just released, we just came out with our food team, a policy brief on different ways that the counties have been stepping up, you know, and looking at different alternative ways to support food security. And we tried to highlight different issues and different programs from each county specifically, and looking at like the literal county government, like what are they funding? What programs are they doing with our dollars? And one highlight from Kauai was your Kupuna feeding program. I mean, all of the counties do offer congregate meals, so like on-site meals, and also home-delivered meals. But Kauai County is the only county to have a funded kupuna program from the county, and they're able to expand their reach in ways that other counties haven't. And that's been also huge and definitely a proactive action, because we know that even in the small emergencies, like when a road is flooded and you just literally can't get to that side of the island, that can be an issue. It can be a huge issue.
Been there. Yeah, and I what I love about our county's program too, because I know we're in some like Kupuna feeding networks, and they really, you know, I'm a big fan of like anything that's participant choice, right? Like the person in the position can say what's right for them. And so those Kupuna can say, oh, I need meals because I can't prepare my own food, or, you know, I would like groceries so I can get more food and make it myself. And it's pretty neat that they allow those choices to people, because some people don't have kitchens. They need the meal, you know, and some people it's a way for them to stay fit and get up and get some movement in for their day and prepare meals. So it's been, I have to say, the county does a really good job. It's a big partnership with their RSVP program and Agency on Elderly Affairs. That's great. I mean, what are some of the, where can people read this report if they want to check it out? Is there a website that they could go visit to learn more?
Yes, definitely. If people just visit hiappleseed.org, it's H-I Appleseed, and then look at our publications tab, it should be right there at the top. But Yes, I mean, some other things that the counties are doing, I mean, I think this is something that has also been huge on Kauai too, is Kaukau for Keiki. We kind of talked about these like four main levers that it seems like the counties have been kind of a leader in on each island. We looked at kupuna feeding, keiki feeding specifically during the summer, disaster prep, and why am I blanking on the fourth one? I can't remember the fourth one right now.
Sorry, but I think Annie's going to look it up right now and check it out. She loves disaster stuff.
Yes, yes. And we tried to keep it very high level and just kind of pull from the county's food access plan, because you guys are all doing a lot of work. Malama Kauai has this food access plan too that we looked at. And so those are the main four things. I'm sorry, the fourth one is support for food banks, just direct funding for food banks. And anyway, as I was saying, Kaukau for Keiki is another huge thing that kind of uplifts your point of having these options, like having choice. And so while a lot of schools do have off-site meals during the summer, we know that's not going to work for a lot of families. And so Kaukau for Keiki has been like a great way to not only get food to people through just literally giving them a box of food for a week and saying, okay, you can take this home, you can cook whatever you want with it. But also, it's a way to get local farmers getting their food in. It's not just, you know, what you might typically see at the schools. So that's been another huge thing.
Yeah, I'm proud to say we did our financials for last summer, and 50% of our budget, over 50% of our budget, was all on local food. So we weren't importing in rice. We got, you know, Sinaloa tortillas, a local bakery's made bread. I mean, we really pushed it. Anytime you can get federal funding in the door and then to stay on island or even in Hawaii is, you know, a really great opportunity, especially as we see these opportunities, you know, might not be there for long term or might change and shift. So that program is fantastic. And what we noticed at the statewide level is over the past 4 years, since allowing those meal box programs, the participation rate of like number of meals served has grown over 300% across the state. Huge, dramatically different because of accessibility. You know, a lot of families couldn't access, you know, a lot of families work, they're trying to balance, you know, you can't bring your kid out every day at 12 for one meal, you know, but they could bring them out once a week to get meals for the week. And I think, you know, having that flexibility to serve people where they're at, you know, is really what good policy should be about, right? Is serving your people. Did we get a caller?
Yeah.
You're pointing.
Well, no, well, I gotta do some business.
Oh, we gotta do business.
Yeah.
Hold on.
So let's take a little bit of rest. Catch your breath a little bit. We've been talking with Genevieve Mama. She's from Hawaii Appleseed, and we're talking about policy regarding the SNAP program and how that affects people in Hawaii and sort of some of the successes of those that have been doing really great work towards feeding people of all ages and all economic backgrounds on Kauai. And we're really proud. Thanks for talking with us today, Genevieve.
Genevieve, thank you for being with us today. Looking forward, I wanted to talk about, you know, what's coming up this legislative session that you're looking forward to. Are there certain bills that you're really excited about to be advocating for?
Yeah, so, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about free school meals expanding, and something that I'm definitely excited about is trying to get that to be free school meals for all students. Last year, with that expansion that we saw to 300% of the federal poverty level, that's obviously a huge jump. It means that for a family of four, if you make, I think it's just over $100,000, you'll now be eligible for free meals. But we would love for that to just be not any barrier for any student, and any student at a public school can get fed. And we work very closely with a lot of different legislators and also the governor's office, and he has mentioned that he wants this to be in his five-year plan. And so we really want to make sure that we can get that in statute to say, you know, by 2030, you know, no student at a public school in Hawaii is going to have to worry about that. And this is something that other states have done. I think it's like a huge thing in Minnesota just this past year. So I'm excited about that one. We're also looking into how we could maybe get this expanded for charter schools. And that's something that is obviously a little bit tricky because we want to make sure that the public charter schools still have their ways of just like making sure that the meals can be local food, because I think for a lot of charter schools, a lot of them are Native Hawaiian, a lot of them might even be immersion schools, and for them it's really important to have like culturally relevant Hawaiian food. So we've been reaching out and working with some charter school advocates who, or just people that are, you know, looking at the public charter schools and feel strongly about that. So definitely if there's any listeners that, you know, have any input and want to make sure that they're heard on that issue, reach out to us for sure, because we always want to make sure that our community is the one that's being impacted in a positive way. Never want to make it harder for the schools. But yeah, that's what I'm feeling pretty passionate about.
I'm super passionate about Hawaiian charter schools getting meal programs. I love that you brought that up. You know, because they do not have the same purchasing power. Even though they get the mm-hmm. same reimbursements, they don't have the same purchasing right. power for those contracts. So those little mandatory milk cartons, you know, are ridiculously priced. And, you know, it's like a third mm-hmm. of your meal cost for some of these places when they don't have those DOE contract prices that don't get passed on right. to them, you know. So we did a couple of pilots at two of our charter schools that had no lunch program. One of them mm-hmm. actually stayed on because they were CEP eligible. That means they qualify for free breakfast, lunch, and snack for free, everybody at the school, which is a great program. And I know they did increase the percentage mm-hmm. that a school had to have free or reduced qualifying a certain percentage of students to qualify for this CEP eligibility, which means that all the kids in the school eat free no matter what. They don't have to do individual qualifying paperwork. And that did help some schools qualify that hadn't qualified before, but it still doesn't give them more reimbursement. Is that something that you guys have proposed along the way? I know we've been advocating at the federal level for increased like school meal reimbursement, and there were mm-hmm. some issues with our DOE not getting data to the feds for them to make that assessment. But I'm wondering if there's an opportunity for the state to step in. Has there been any precedent anywhere else where, you know, if we really want to feed our kids local food, is there any states that are kind of chipping in to help make that more possible?
Yeah, so it's definitely difficult with public charter schools because we want them to remain independent, but at the same time, you know, these are public schools and they should be able to provide food for their students and not have it at such a high cost to them themselves. And so we're definitely looking into it right now to see what other states would have done and try to see if there's like a similar program we could model it off of. I think we have, like you mentioned, had some successful pilots, but it's really just like moving that out of the pilot process and having it be that, you know, maybe public charter schools can just have funding from the state so that whatever they're getting reimbursed from the federal level can just come from the federal level, but then there can be another pot of money that's, you know, not tied to all of that paperwork that can just be from the state that reimburses them for, you know, X amount of cost per meal. I think this is definitely something that, as you mentioned, those CEP schools, that would really benefit them because it would just be additional money to provide so that, you know, they don't have to front maybe say like $5 of the $10 that it costs to produce that meal. And we're trying to look into ways that it would be, the funds could be distributed equitably. So we're definitely working with the charter schools on that, just because it's hard, because some of those CEP schools, they, the whole point is that, you know, the kids can eat for free and that's great and the parents don't have to pay. But the school itself, they're not getting the meals for free, essentially. Depends on the ratio of like the low income people in that area, and it's multiplied by this number. It's like, you know, there's all this red tape to receive that money. And then there are the schools that don't have that program and they have to charge parents these pretty high prices for their meals. So we want to figure out a way for the state to really aid them because of what you mentioned before, which is that they don't have that purchasing power. So we talked to schools and they're like, we can't even join the like National School Lunch Program and even get those reimbursements because we don't have vendors that we could use to provide those meals. So it's really this larger issue we're starting to realize, and we're trying to get, you know, more in touch with the public charter schools here and figure out, maybe not this session, but in the future, a bigger, you know, system solution to this issue. But I think with next session, just looking at getting some funding to make it more equitable.
Yeah, and I've seen the charter schools do, like, sorry, DOE, they blow the DOE out of the water on local procurement. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, when we were working with Kawaikini, I think it was 47% was locally procured. And that's including the milk that they're forced. I know there was a lot of talks prior to this administration where there's a whole, like, Bureau of Indian Affairs at the federal level that was actually lobbying for a waiver for milk for Indigenous populations because it wasn't a food. We all know, like, big dairy is not going to let that happen, right? But for the first time, USDA was actually kind of listening and saying, like, hey, they're not asking for juice. They just want to not have to serve milk, and they can use that money to have more fruits and vegetables on the plate. And it seems like, you know, obviously that conversation's gotten pushed under the rug because we love corporations in America and the lobbies that happen. But it was going in a cool direction for a little bit there. You know, something else you said really struck out, and I'm wondering if folks know this. Maybe you want to share how the federal poverty level gets updated and how Hawaii gets impacted, because I feel like people are, like, maybe not so understanding of how it's calculated and how Hawaii is compared to other states and places when these determinations are made.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, aside from just food, there are so many ways that Hawaii is very unique. And we get all of these weird regulations and exceptions from the federal government, which is usually super helpful, but sometimes we can get left out in so many different ways that we have to be like, no, it's a little different here. No, it's different for this reason. And so, yeah, federal poverty level is one of them. The federal poverty level for Hawaii is different than just the general federal poverty level, and they use, you know, a specific formula in order to calculate it. And it's based off of household size and the base amount of poverty for that household. And then the part that changes for Hawaii, and I think also Alaska has its own separate federal poverty level, is based on inflation. And then that's when they kind of look at different expenses. So usually when you look at federal poverty level, it might have this very basic thing, but you might say the 48 contiguous states or whatever, NDC, and then Alaska and Hawaii has a different. And I mean, what we see with almost everything, and it's very obvious at this point, is it's always, you know, so much higher in Hawaii, cost is so much higher, the level, the threshold for poverty is so much, you know, it's just something that always stands out. And it affects a lot of things too. It affects how SNAP is calculated. Another, you know, federal advocacy thing that has kind of been on our minds even before this administration and whatnot was the way that SNAP benefits are calculated. And I think you definitely are familiar with this, about how the USDA had this report about, it's called the Thrifty Food Plan, mm-hmm. where Hawaii prices were calculated based on only Honolulu data. And so even though our, you know, maximum allotments for SNAP, so say, like, you can make this much, you can have this much money a month for SNAP, although it was higher for Hawaii, it was not based on neighbor island data. They were using only Honolulu grocery price mm-hmm. data, which is vastly different from neighbor island data, which I'm sure in Kauai is very obvious. And so we had to do a lot of advocacy to get them to do this report, looking at neighbor island data, because it was like, you can't just look at Honolulu only. Even on Oahu, I'm here based on Oahu, you know, gas prices on the North Shore are so much different than right next to the port, you know, in Honolulu. So that was something that we had to advocate for, and they did a reassessment, but it hasn't been implemented, and that's another thing that we're also watching. So many things.
Well, and the way that I understand it, and it was kind of confusing for me to hear it, is that we misreported something. And so they actually gave us more SNAP allotments 1 year than we actually qualified for. And so this year they've actually lowered them to offset that overpayment to kind of equalize out. So I'm not sure if that's going to be changing, what things look like for the state next year.
Yeah, it's really weird and wonky. But essentially, before any of these calculations happen, you're correct, there was this overpayment. So I think
you tell me I'm right a lot. You need to go talk to my husband, because...
Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
Yes, but you are. And it was pretty high. It was like $1,700 a month was the maximum allotment, which was high relative to, you know, the rest of the United States. And then they were like, oh, that was an overpayment. So they did this report, and then it was something different for Alaska and Hawaii. And then that was using only Honolulu data. So then they had to do another one for the neighbor island inclusive data. And so right now, they're just using the Honolulu only data. So we're never going to get fully back to that 1700 maximum a month. But we should be bumped up. I think it's like, you know, like maybe about $50 a month for the maximum. And that hasn't happened yet because of this whole HR1, you know, they don't want to change any allotments going forward. So never going to go back to that high allotment that we did see, but there's still like an issue there where they're only using Honolulu data currently. So hopefully we can get that like 2% increase.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's crazy. I had a Kupuna client who got $20 a month. And this woman, disabled, in low-income senior housing, has like a nurse that comes to her, can't leave her apartment. It's pretty crazy when you really dig into it. So, you know, I hope for her sake and other people in that position, people can be a little bit more compassionate in their outlook on who receives SNAP and why. And I think these conversations are important to like kind of inform people on the reality of the situation too. So thank you for having that. Going back to the state level session, I don't know if you're willing to get down and dirty with us, but what's your sense on the priorities of the current legislators? You know, every year it tends to be, you know, people are leaning different ways or more about certain topics than others. Like, I assume you guys have been already starting to meet with folks. What are you taking away?
Yes. So, I mean, this session is definitely going to be different than last session. And I think a huge part of that is that there was that whole shakeup with the legislation, and our finance chair is going to be completely different. So that's huge. I mean, last session we were asking for preschool meals to Senator Yamashita. And so that's going to look super different this year. And we've been trying to talk to Rep. Todd, and it seems that, you know, we've been able to meet as Appleseed and a few of our advocates, and they've been able to try to test the waters, but you really never know until session happens. We really are trying to work with our partners, though, to just come with like the most strategic advocacy and really just make it about community and listening to community voices. I will say, I think they actually just posted today the new Senate committee, so we're really just looking to see what got moved around, because sometimes these shakeups, I mean, they don't happen every year. So I think we're definitely hopeful with our new finance chair, because, you know, any change is the potential to make some progress. Appleseed as a whole, aside from the food equity team, along with the food equity team, we're definitely looking at the state budget and also how all of the tax cuts are going to be affecting us. Obviously, the tax cuts are going to be great for working families, but unfortunately, it was a very unfair distribution of tax cuts to the super wealthy in Hawaii, and that's going to make a huge hole in our budget. And so that's definitely something that we're watching, and we're hoping that there can be some way to kind of fill that hole, because at the end of the day, a lot of these asks that we have are, you know, tied to financials.
That's depressing, yeah. That it's kind of mirroring what's happening at the federal level, though, does it not?
It is. Yeah, so, I mean, on top of the federal income tax cuts, we had state income tax cuts just not in 2025, but in 2024. And so we're really going to be hit there. And I think Governor Green and his team kind of were talking about how we might have to tap into some of our rainy day funds and how they're going to look at maybe going back on some of these income tax cuts. So we're definitely happy to see that there's going to be some change, because it's a concern, very concerning, especially with that stacked on top of the federal tax cuts. And as much as no one likes to talk about taxes, I mean, we need money in order to get these programs going.
Right, and people are barely making it now. So those, like you said, like the regressive versus progressive tax policies, you know, basically say where we're getting that money from. Off of whose backs, right? And, you know, I don't think a lot of us little people on the ground can take too much more. You know, you see people living on the streets already, so... That'll be interesting. If people want to learn more about that, I know I believe there's like a Hawaii Tax Coalition or Fair
yes,
Tax.
The Hawaii Tax Fairness Coalition.
Tax Fairness
is
Coalition.
Relaunching. Yes.
And
their website is, I think, High Tax Fairness Coalition.
Awesome. Annie's looking it up.
HighTaxFairness.org.
Thank you.
There it is. Thank you.
And
yeah, so if people are excited to talk about taxes, or if you're not at all, you are worried, you know, about how you're going to pay for this or who's going to pay for all of this, definitely you can look at that website, check it out, and see how you can get involved.
And, you know, kind of wrapping up our conversation, you know, how do they find out more about Appleseed if they want to get involved in some of these, like, hunger coalitions and different groups? They want to stay attuned to, you know, take action moments and policy. Where do they go for that kind of information?
Yes, definitely. If you want to, you know, reach out to me personally on any of these issues, all my info is up on our Hawaii Appleseed website. But for specific hunger policy, this is a shameless plug for our network, the Hawaii Hunger Action Network, which is hawaiihungeraction.org. Is a great way. If you just go to the HawaiiHungerAction.org page, see right there a nice button that says Take Action, and that can get you connected to us. We send out a bunch of different issues that are relevant to hunger policy, and we really try to focus on not just getting out information, but getting out actual ways for people in Hawaii to voice their concerns or offer testimony. Or, you know, take action is the main thing. Really trying to make it a verb.
That's important, because you can doom scroll all day, right, and hear all these horrible things. But I'm always like, okay, but what do I do about it, right? I'm like, how do I make myself feel better that this is happening? Is I try to stop it, or I try to help advocate for an alternative. And if you don't have action, you know, you just have, like, sad feelings. So that action is critical. Thank you for being a part of that and putting that out there. And so we end on a happy note. You know, if it was any legislative session, next session, didn't matter who the legislators were, and you could pass any dream policy that you wanted for hunger, what would that look like? What's your dream bill?
Oh my gosh, any dream bill. I think I talked about it a little bit before, but just free school meals for all would be great.
Right on.
And it would be super exciting. So yeah, we'll leave on that happy note.
I'm with you. I'm wishing for the best. And so hopefully everybody jumps in and we make that happen this year.
Sure.
Well, thanks again for joining us today. That's Genevieve Mama at Hawaii Appleseed. It's highappleseed.org. You can go learn some more about their good work in hunger policy. And thanks again.
Well, hello for having me.
Aloha.
And if you want to learn more about them, of course, there's the website there, highappleseed.org. We'll also have the archive of this program up on the kkcr.org website that you can also hear it again if you missed some of those statistics. The Hawaii Tax Fairness Coalition, I just looked that up while they were talking, and it is... very interesting statistics they have on the front page. If you feel like having yourself a really fun doom scroll, That'd be one that I can recommend for the evening.
And you can never get enough.
Never get enough.
At least it'll be intentional doom scrolling. You're not just scrolling Facebook, you know, you're hunting for something specific to get upset about.
Yeah. I mean, like some of us, like some of that like rage, like feeds us a little bit towards active change or something. And some of us need that. Am I pointing at myself? I kind of am. So we've got another hour of the Malama Kauai show. Stay tuned for that. And also, if you've got an island tradition or a Christmas tradition that you love.
Yeah, we're going to talk Christmas next.
Mm-hmm, give us a
call.
The
good, the bad, the scary.
Oh, God, help us. It's 826-7771. You can give us a call.
Hello, caller. Are you here to share some Christmas joy with us?
Oh. Is that me?
Yeah, it's you.
Hey.
Hey, caller, you're on the air.
Oh, hey. How's it going? I am here to share some, well, I'd like to call it Christmas cheer, but we'll see how it goes. Yeah, I'm calling in because I was part of the Lights on Rice parade just a week and a half ago.
The most famous Lights on Rice parade in about 100 years.
Yeah, apparently we created some infamy. Not entirely intentional. We had a Krampus float, which if you're not familiar, you want me to go into the history of Krampus just real quick?
Sure. I think there's listeners out there that maybe haven't heard of it, as we've seen.
Okay. So, yeah, Krampus is from, like, Germany and Central Europe, mostly. And he's kind of a counterpart to St. Nicholas. So the church didn't feel that it was right for a saint to be punishing children if they were bad. So there's kind of a bunch of different ones over the years. But Krampus was one in that area that they adopted from folklore. And he's kind of a horned, menacing feature or creature who's intended to, you know, scare the children to make sure that they behave so that when they behave, St. Nicholas brings them gifts and they don't have to end up with a lump of coal or whatever else.
He's a creepy Grinch. A creepy, like, folklore-y Grinch. Yeah.
Very much in the style of the Grinch, but also very German, and we tend to be a lot more intense with the stories we tell children. Like, Hansel and Gretel wasn't coming from any other country. That had to be from Germany.
Yeah, they had some pretty hardcore children's stories.
Yeah, and...
Yeah, go ahead.
The Brothers Grimm were definitely grim, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and from what I have understood about the Krampus legends, it didn't have to be a terror issue. Like, I've heard from a lot of German families, like, it was actually kind of fun. He was like a boogeyman that came to the door and left things in your boots or something. You know, is that it?
That's definitely part of it. And again, it has such, like, a rich history that there's a lot of different flavors. But, like, throughout the 1900s, like, there was, like, Christmas cards with Krampus on it, and he might have little poems on them. You know, sometimes they were cheeky little poems, more meant for adults, but there were ones for kids too. And it was just like he became this character that was there alongside Saint Nick, just to, you know, spice things up, I guess.
And, you know, I read the article in Civil Beat that came out today about this, and it kind of horrified me that there were threats going to people about this float. I have to say, like, that just really kind of hurt my soul a little bit, that, like, hey, you might not like it. It might not be for you. You know, my daughter might have been scared, but my son needs to see it. So, you know, I want to bring him to Krampus instead of sit on Santa's lap.
Right.
You know, but at the end of the day, it's like theatrics, right? And it's, you know, we just had Halloween a couple months ago. So I'm wondering, maybe this is like too big of a question to ask, but what do you think got people so upset that they felt the need to like physically threaten other people because of a holiday Christmas parade float?
Yeah, I think there were a couple things at play. So one of them is there was one gentleman, which maybe I shouldn't use that term, but he was very upset by our float as we were trying to enter the parade. and you read this in the article, but he tried to physically stop the float. Like, he was getting in front of the truck. And
that's commitment.
You know, we kind of had to, like...
That really is commitment.
He was very passionate. He was so passionate that as we're proceeding down the parade, he was going ahead of us and, like, telling parents, hide your children, there's demons coming. So I think that honestly elevated the temperature and everyone's reactions to the float, because, you know, we weren't screaming at people. We weren't doing, like, we were...
You guys were playing, like, pop
Miley Cyrus
hits from the 90s, right? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, handing out candy, and yes, we were dressed as Krampus, which is scary, but also we're giving out candy to kids and just playing some pop music. So, I think that was a big part of it. From what I've heard, there's a lot of people who just had no idea what Krampus was, had never heard of it, so that was kind of part of why I wanted to call in. Just, like, the more I can put it out there, the better.
And take the veil off, right? You're not sitting there trying to be anti-Christianity, demon spawn, coming to steal and cage people's children. You're, like, playing a playful riff on, you know, the Krampus tradition.
Yeah, and as the gentleman said in the article, it was meant to be something different than the typical float that we have in the Lights on Rise parade. Is that correct?
Right, or, like, everybody has. Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, and... We knew we were going to stick out. We knew some people wouldn't like it.
Yeah, you guys are artsy. You know, yours me different.
Yeah, I have a hard time just fitting in. So always going to do something a little bit different and try and, you know, expand people's experiences. But, you know, I grew up with a German grandma telling me about Krampus every year. And, you know, probably the story changed as I got older, you know, got a little scarier each time. And that, you know, that's kind of part of the story. Like, I heard from other people in the parade that there were kids that were, like, chanting for candy as everyone was going by. You know, like, candy, candy. And if people didn't give them candy, they started booing.
Oh. Which sounds really hurtful.
To me...
A meanness in the world right now.
Like, yeah. And then once candy started getting handed out, it was like they all swarmed. So I don't know. Maybe a little Krampus isn't such a bad thing.
My goodness.
I'm telling you, my son needs a Krampus. I'm going to... Yeah. Might have to try and hunt you guys down and have somebody come pay a visit to our house.
Yeah.
Right. So,
the most... Go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, the most important point I want to make is, like, We weren't trying to convert anyone into demon worship. I can say that. I didn't think that I would have to say that. But that's
something
no one media posted. Yeah.
That's something no one really expects that they're going to say. Yeah.
That you need to say.
Yeah, like, this is part of our Christmas tradition. We wanted to share it. We thought that would be okay. And if having to see something that looked different for 2 minutes during a 2-hour parade ruined an experience for you, then, like, I don't know what to say about that. But we weren't aiming to ruin anyone's Christmas parade. We just thought we'd switch it up a little.
Well, and I just want to say for the record, for all the people that are upset, I wish I saw that many people that upset over how many kids are sleeping on the street who don't have food. You know, we have much bigger real problems in the world.
In actual ice cages.
Yeah, in actual cages. I mean, if there was this kind of energy towards problems, like real problems that need to get solved in society, we would be a lot better off. So I would love to encourage those people who, you know, are putting threats out there or being negative about this whole thing to really think, maybe take that energy and we can direct it towards something a little bit more productive too. So... I'm sorry anyone in our community gets attacked in that way for artistic expression or otherwise. But, thank you for calling in, sharing the story. I think it's good for people to hear. And like I said, I'm going to try and find you guys so you can come talk to my Sid.
To your kid.
Absolutely.
I'm not joking.
Yeah,
you should set up like one of those, like, pay $5, come get a picture with Krampus. I would be in that line.
That's
That's funny. I don't know if the mall would take you right now, but, you know, maybe they're somewhere.
Are there any plans for next year's parade?
Are you allowed in next year's parade?
That's a very good question. As far as we know, no one has expressed anything that they're going to try and keep us out of the parade, but also, we'll see what we're going to do. But, you know, as far as your son's concerned, I'll polish up the horns and we'll make sure that he's good for the rest of the year, or at least next year. What I'm wondering is, you know, in my day, every family had a photo of every kid sobbing their eyes out next to Santa Claus in the mall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that, I'm assuming that still happens, right? Like, kids get scared by everything.
My daughter does. She probably will cry. We haven't brought her yet, but.
I cried on Santa's lap. It was terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then
that,
there's.
You know, that one at least makes sense. My sister had a year where she was terrified of butterflies.
Well. Oh, that's quite the fear.
Mm-hmm.
And look how you guys turned out. No.
Oh, she's way better than me.
There's also a lot of different traditions that sort of use a good guy, bad guy to motivate children towards behavior. And I have a hard time seeing how physical threats against people for this one is okay rather than the Grinch or the Minions or whatever other thing is out there.
Well, I don't think physical threats are ever okay. Like, we're grown adults. It's not how we treat each other. We talk about bullying in our schools and how we want to see it go away. Well, who do you think the kids are watching? When grown adults are doing this to other adults over, you know, some artistic expression because someone's different than you, like, we should just not see that in our own communities and in our own grown adults. You know?
Yeah. And it's very true. Like, on
do better, Kauai. Come on.
On KKCR, I try to do a lot of work to get people to look at different perspectives and see people's perspectives from different areas. And I'm glad that you called today to sort of bring that perspective to such a hot topic that I'm sure you didn't think was going to be so hot.
I sure didn't. And, you know, I do have to say, like, while there were plenty of inflammatory comments, there was a lot of people that, like, really put some time into, like, trying to respond to people and tell them, like, this is what we were doing with Krampus. This is where it comes from. You know, I get it might be new to you, but they really went.